Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
We can hear you.
I have an awful echo.
Ah. What could that be from?
No, it's not from you guys. It's from me.
I recommend using the chat on the left. If you chat a little bit more, it will be easier for the language and the rover speaking and we talking. And we are making comments, I mean.
Okay, well, we're making Webhead history, or learning together history, or whatever. We're taking advantage of, you know, last week we met in Google Hangout like this, only for our learning together session, which takes place every Sunday at about this time. It happens to be 1400 GMT at the moment. And I also like to mention the date while I'm at it. Today is the 27th of May, 2012. And so 1 week ago, on the 22nd of May, it was not possible for us to stream like this and record. We were able to stream, but we weren't able to record it. And you can see in our archives at posterous.com, together at posterous.com. Can everyone hear me okay, by the way?
Beautiful.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, it only happened that, you know, that the worldwide rollout happened just this last week. So, of course, we're all picking up on it. Robert posted that information in a short video, which I watched and was inspired immediately to record my own, a Hello World video. So here we are. We're able to broadcast using Google Hangout, and I think this is actually going to revolutionize, you know, collaborating together like this, because it's so easy now. It used to be so difficult. Hi, everybody. Okay, so, well, maybe we could go around and see who all the people are. I'm Vance in Abu Dhabi, UAE, and over there on my, which way? That direction. Nope, that way. Oh, that way. Who's over there?
I can go. I'm Robert Squires. I'm in Missoula, Montana. It's a pretty rainy day. Peggy?
Is your mic off? The jacket. Peggy went dark there. Well, we can go over to Nina. Let's. Okay. Hi, Nina. Where are you?
I'm Nina Liakos. I'm in Gaithersburg, Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C. It's hot and humid.
My video keeps freezing. Sometimes I have to exit and then come back in order to fix that. So, and then next we have Luis.
My name is Luis Ordóñez. I am from the Caribbean, country in the Caribbean, Venezuela. I am in Caracas now and enjoy very much to be with you. Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Okay, and next door, that's Lane. Lane next door.
Hi. I'm Lane Marshall, and I'm in New York. I'm at Long Island University. I'm enjoying a week between semesters, and I begin on Tuesday teaching multicultural education, so I'm going to have my students chime
wow.
in this course. I have to have us all join when it starts up.
Fantastic.
Okay. You can play them this video.
Yes.
Okay, and Dilip? You got a microphone? Can you hear us okay? Dilip Barad. I met him in Vellore, India, last summer. And he's a colleague of Kalyan Chattopadhyay's. Can you hear us, Dilip? He's from India. He's a professor there. Can you hear us okay? Okay. Next to Dilip is on the far left over there. That would be Aiden. Can you hear us?
Yes, okay. I can hear you. I don't know how to use this thing, and I don't have
a microphone. Well, I'm using a built-in mic. But anyway, I hope you can hear me loud and clear.
We can.
I'm in Kaohsiung, Taiwan. I teach at Wenzhou Orthodox College of Languages. And, yeah, I've taught language and culture before. So, yes, glad to be here.
Okay. Well, let's see. We have a program tonight. Let's see if I can find it. I can put a link in the... I'm not sure what I've got here queued to go. That's it, right there. That's the link to Robert's session. And we didn't hear... I don't know, is Peggy still there? Peggy, if you can say hi to us, we could hear you. Okay, Peggy's in Phoenix, Arizona. And she just typed that. Okay. All right, so Robert, let's turn it over to you. And if you want to click on the link I put in there, you would be able to browse to the web page that Robert put up and tell us about your course. It's on teaching multiculturalism. Tell us about it.
Sure. Thanks, Vance. Well, my background, like many of yours, it seems, is in education and teaching English as a second language. And I've become involved more recently in the field of instructional design and designing online learning experience for students. And obviously, been following what's been going on in the world of open online courses, as there's a lot going on at this time. But basically, this course in multicultural education is a kind of coming together of many different interests of mine, exploring what it means to create a democratic learning opportunity for students within the structures that exist at, let's say, a public institution in North America. So I'm not sure to what extent all of you have participated in some of the open online courses that have been offered recently, but the idea with this course is to do things a little bit differently. It's clearly in the same vein, but rather than this being a massive open online course, I'd like it to be much more of an intimate, collaborative experience where the participants also have that opportunity to get interaction with the facilitators of the session, as well as the interaction that can happen between self-forming networks or groups of peers. So it's kind of an attempt to get the best of the online instruction element, as well as the diversity and potential that opening it up can bring. And I'm already just blown away by Lane's comment there that she's hoping to have her multicultural class join our class for this session. I mean, I just think that's absolutely amazing, and I would love it for you to join us as well. Part of my thinking in terms of making a smaller, more, I guess, intimate online course is, you know, some of the experiences that I've had with the Electronic Village online. Vance and I had a conversation about when, you know, the first EBO sessions came about, and this was in 2001, Vance, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that the work that's going on in terms of fostering that collaboration has its forefather or mother or whatever at an earlier time than you know, these recent developments with MOOCs. And I think that we've learned a great deal by developing this approach over time. And one of the strengths, and Nina might be able to speak to this because she was she was a co-facilitator on a session that we did, one of the greatest strengths of the EBO sessions is that there is that support from the facilitators for the students in the course. Aidan, could also point to numerous examples of the way that the facilitators, the moderators, come together in the EBO sessions to really create as much of a student-centered learning experience as possible. Excuse me. And that's one of the things that I think we need to kind of look at this time with the massive open online courses. Of course, there's something very powerful to be able to access these different resources that are available to everyone and connect with peers and self-form and investigate. But the reality is, with those kinds of numbers, over 2,000, or if we're looking at the Stanford MOOCs on artificial intelligence or machine learning, the numbers are in the 150,000s. We're talking about a much more either independent model, which is fine, or we're talking about a much more interaction with content model. And I think a key instructional design model by Garrison and Anderson, the Community of Inquiry Framework, emphasizes the three different elements, content to student interaction or student to content interaction, student to student, and maybe participant is a better word, and participant to instructor interaction. And I think if you get those three elements in an online course, then you really have a stronger learning experience, and that's there's research to support that those are all key elements. So I kind of think that the model that has been evolved with the EBO sessions, in addition to some principles of instructional design, help the discussion that's taking place in terms of how do we create an open online experience that is as rewarding as possible for students. And multicultural education couldn't be a better topic for it, it seems. So that's my thinking on the openness side of things, but I'd be very interested in hearing what other thoughts you might have about perhaps recently your experiences in those massive open online courses.
You say your course will be in a Moodle, but you haven't put a link up. Is it open for everybody, or is it you're going to keep it small somehow?
Yeah, it is open for everybody, and I have a separate site that I can shoot you the link. I was making sure it was up last night. That I'll make sure that everybody can go to sign up there. What will happen? Everybody can join. It'll be a first come, first serve type of basis. I guess I would estimate that we would have around 100 or so additional participants in this course. And Lane, if that if there's a class that I know is looking to participate, we can certainly work with that as well. But basically, there'll be a website. It's eac.instructionaldesigning.org, and you'll go to that site, and then there'll be a form to sign up. And what I need to do is create those accounts, because the Moodle is the system that the University of Montana uses. So you're within a closed system. The way that we get at the openness element of that is participants can be using their blogs, we'll be using Beagle, we'll be using Twitter, we'll be using Google+, Tumblr, Posters, whatever media tools individuals would like to use. But there'll also be a clearly designed framework within a learning management system that is owned and operated by
Yeah, incidentally, I might, if there's noise coming from somewhere, I might mute that noise. And if I do mute you, you'll have to unmute yourself. That is, you can easily do that. But once I've muted you, I can't unmute you. So you'll have to unmute yourself. So you should see an indication on your somewhere that you're muted. And your lips will move and will tell you you're muted. Okay. So, and another thing, too, you might mute yourself when you're not talking. That could help solve problems, too. There's a little mic icon you can click on, and that will switch off your sound in case there's noise going on in your house or something like that. Okay.
Can you figure out how to share links? I guess we just do it through Google Plus, and then everybody can access it. Is that what you figured out, Vance?
Yeah, you can put the links in the text chat if you have that open. Do you have it open? There's a chat going on. I think you might have to click on the chat button in the upper left-hand corner of the screen. But we've got a link to instructional design. Designing, instructionaldesigning.org.
Oh, I guess it's want to add eac.instructionaldesigning.org in front of that. Don't see
instructional
the chat.
Designing.
What? Yeah, could you type it into the chat, Robert?
Yeah, I don't see it.
Okay,
look. Up in the upper left hand.
I see the upper left where it says chat. Yeah.
Perfect. Thanks, Hayden. Mm-hmm. Thanks, all.
Cool.
Try that.
Yeah. There we go. Okay.
Designing. Yeah.
All right. We'll stick that in there.
So is that live now, Robert?
It is, yeah.
Robert, when does your course officially start?
June 11th. I guess I'll start creating those accounts around June 6th or 7th and get people access to the course a few days before it starts.
And how long will it run?
Say that again?
How long will it run, the course?
7 weeks.
Robert, I'm curious, is the University of Montana supporting you in this, or are you just doing this for the love of it in your spare time?
Yeah, it's kind of an experiment to an extent. So, yes, the university is supporting the experiment. But part of my interest here is I would like to investigate, you know, what impact bringing diversity into the classroom has in terms of student achievement. And so I'm started my doctoral studies in this focus on whether or not we can improve the learning experience by bringing in greater diversity. And as you'd expect, there's some research to support that idea. But whether that can be fostered in this online space is something that I'm looking at investigating as part of my thesis. So at this stage, this time, we're just being experimental. So this isn't a research piece that's going on as part of this course.
Right. Are you going to focus on K-12 or higher ed or everything? Does classroom discounts, I mean, every kind of classroom or certain kinds of classrooms?
That's a great question. Yeah, the part of the curriculum and instruction program at the University of Montana has an explicit K-12 focus, K-16. So one of the groups or part of the audience that I'd like to have participate in this course are actual Missoula County Public Schools teachers. And one thing I've been toying with is offering Office of Public Instruction, OPI, credit for participation in this course, which would mean tracking, you know, their participation. But it would be wonderful to have some teachers who are actually in the schools that can make a difference in terms of, how to approach issues of race, gender, bullying, social justice, how to get at a critical pedagogy. So that would be another audience that I'd love to have participate.
Yeah, I'm just wondering because, you know, I teach in higher education, and I'm wondering how relevant this is going to be to me. Obviously, it's an interesting topic, but is it professionally interesting to me or just interesting to me? You know, do I want to devote all the time it would take when I don't teach kids?
Sure. No, one thing that's really interesting is I'm co-designing this course with a Native American guy who's in my doctoral program. Excuse me. So we're really, getting at some of those kinds of issues that, is part of American culture. Basically, if you consider how the history of the United States has developed, the impact on Native Americans, there's a lot that needs to be explored. So I think there will be certainly broader considerations that spin out of the course. It's not, a part of the K-16 teaching program, as it were. Obviously, my main focus is higher education these days. But I think that there'll be a little bit for everyone. So absolutely, for you, Nina, on a casual basis, perhaps like Peggy, I think that it might be kind of interesting.
Sounds interesting.
Louise is asking politely if he could. Oh, so Louise popped out of here?
Yeah, he left.
Oh, okay. He wanted to make a comment. I've been kind of tuning into most of the MOOCs going on. Kurt Bonk is giving a. I think he's going to talk. He hasn't. Louise is
here
back.
He is.
Yeah. Okay, Louise, go ahead.
Okay.
What did you want to say?
Robert, I wanted to ask you the following question. Let me explain first. Right now, I am taking a Stanford course on entrepreneurship. Through that course, I met a guy from Argentina and a guy from Italy. The guy from Italy is a professor in the university in education. The guy in Argentina is a businessman that works with with digital bases, okay, with electronics. And I am trying to learn why it's so hard in our school system to introduce digital techniques, all these technologies that we are using today, to say something. I am interested in technology transfer from your culture, American Anglo-Saxon culture, to our Latin American culture. And I call it technology transfer because it's really a technological problem to transfer all that within a frame mind. Okay, what I wanted to point is that in my Stanford course, I met the Argentinian, I met the Italian, and we made the team, and we are working together and learning a lot. Before this class, I was working with the Italian guy, who is a PhD in education, and we are talking about theories that will help us to create clients. Clients means people that must first become literate in all these technologies before making cooperatives, coops, to develop business. We are thinking about developing coops for development. But first you must train them in all these technologies. The reason why I explain all of this is because when I get into these massive courses, I am looking for other participants to make teams that will allow me to learn much more in the specific areas that I want. So I get the general aspects from the teacher that is teaching the course. For example, in your course, you are going to talk about culturalism, and I am very interested in that area for the reasons that I already explained. But you will be talking to a bunch of people, so you will be treating general topics. Within the participants, I can find specific people, like, for example, what I already put in this on the chat, the World Values Survey. I don't know if you will be mentioning that kind of work in your talk, but the World Values Survey is, I just I put it on before, I won't write it again, okay? But it's very interesting. If I can find in your course 3-4 guys that are working on that, will be great for what I am doing. That's why I like these formats of many participants. When you say that you prefer small participants, it's because you have in mind something that you must pass on to the students. My question is, you follow my difference? What do you prefer? What do you recommend?
Yeah, I guess I disagree with the thought that the group is smaller because this is something that, you know, we want to pass on to the students. The idea with keeping the group smaller is that it provides an opportunity for greater interaction amongst the group. That if you're looking for numbers, then those massive open online courses is exactly where you need to be. I would say that, you know, this course is open to everyone, but in order to provide the best possible elements of interaction, for example, I mean, if you want to investigate some work related to the link that you shared and have Shandine and I mean, we happen to be the facilitators, but we're participants in that course. If you wanted to have us give some feedback on that, I think that that's part of this potential experience, that we should all be open to looking at the work that everyone is doing and offering real feedback on it. What I've been finding in MOOCs is that the stream is pretty thin. So unless you're looking for, you know, finding those individuals that are like-minded that you can work together on, which is a very legitimate aim of a MOOC, then in terms of the how you can interact around certain topics, I think from the feet that come, let's say, from Change 2011, there's I don't know, a dozen tweets and maybe one blog post coming on a weekly basis, and then of course there's the live sessions, which are great and add value to the whole experience. But I'm talking about a much more interactive kind of experience, and that's why we're keeping the groups smaller, so that there is that ability to really get together around these ideas. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I put the words orient, declare, network, cluster, and focus in the text chat because those are how Dave Cormier in his little videos that he made, which are really worth watching, how he said you deal with MOOCs. You orient, you see what's going on there, then you declare why you're there, then you start networking, and that's the part that, the clustering, that is, you find people in that network that you want to deal with, and that's what Louise is describing. And then focus, that means to come up with your own project or your own learning outcome, you know, from that. So that's supposedly one of the advantages of a huge MOOC, but I'm sure there's a, you know, as long as you reach a critical mass, your MOOC will take off. I mean, if you're talking to 100 people or something like that, that's fine, you know, but still, even
I'm
that
not looking for a critical mass, to be honest. And this is the thing. I think that, you know, a MOOC is slightly different. What we're looking for is the ability to bring in the best of the diversity that can happen in an open online course, but do so in such a way that the whole group can come together and feel as though they're supported and facilitated in that learning experience. So I think at this time, MOOCs are fantastic, don't get me wrong, but there's a need to balance the involvement around the contributions that people are making, sometimes you get lost in the stream, or the stream itself isn't that rich, because it's, you know, a few posts here and there. Now, it's an interesting point. I think that what's been done with MOOCs, and this is Siemens and Downs, I think they do fantastically, and that is this sense that it, education should be a democratic process, that everyone can join and participate as they would like to participate. That's exactly the idea that I would like to get at. What concerns me is with the Stanford MOOCs, is how it's based upon an educational model that is, again, teacher-fronted, that is a model that is a distribution of core content and not generated by the group or having the possibility of feedback directly from those instructors. And that's the piece that I'd like to incorporate into this open online experience. That, and by instructor, I'm really trying to give a sense of facilitator here, that there needs to be that opportunity to connect with that group.
I so agree, Robert. I think that, well, I've never signed up for one of those MOOCs because they just seem to me to be so overwhelming and not very different from watching a series of recorded lectures. There are so many of those on the web, like Michael Sandel's Justice from Harvard. It's very interesting, but there's no, it's all one way. So I think a MOOC, a massive class, is also pretty much all one way. There are only going to be a few people that are going to manage to get to turn it around and have some input. But I'm also wondering, in your course, let's say if I sign up for your course, but I'm kind of peripherally interested because of where I work, you know, that basically takes a place away from somebody who is more focused on K through 12, and maybe that's not a good thing to have me essentially lurking in the background. And that connects with another question I wanted to ask, which was, how exactly were you going to limit the number of participants? How are you going to cut off the participants at 100? I mean, what happens if it goes viral and, you know, a million people decide that they want to participate in this intimate experience? I always wonder that with EVO. Like, yeah. Wouldn't it be better if people were, if the sessions were limited, but then you also have the problem that in any given session, some of the most interactive people may come in at the end, whereas the people that signed up early may be lurking if they're there at all. So have you thought about how you're going to deal with these problems?
Yeah, I have a bit. And, you know, again, it's something that's going to be a bit of an experiment, but you know, I think Lane put in the chat there that lurking is unavoidable, and I think that that's absolutely right, and I think that that's great. If people want to come and just see what this course will be like, then that's wonderful. The way that I've been looking in terms of the participation of around 100 people, and based on experiences with the EVO sessions, based on looking at the data from Planck 2010, CCK 08, other massive open online courses, is that typically you have around somewhere between 2 to 7% of the people who are the total enrollment actively participating, and it's a very similar number to the number of participants actively within a community of practice or a networked group like the Webheads, for instance. I mean, this group here represents the active participants, which is more in the Webheads, but who are involved. So the idea is that if we have approximately 100 people sign up at that eac.instructionaldesigning.org, then out of that 100, I expect pretty much 95 95% of those, 95, to be just experiencing, being part of it, and bringing whatever they would like to the table every now and then. And what it means, probably, is that around 5 are going to participate actively. And by participating actively, I'm not expecting them to be completing the assignments that the other students are required to in order to meet the expectations of a graduate level curriculum and instruction course at the University of Montana. We're going to have 21 at this point graduate students who, of course, there'll be a number of assignments. They'll have options in terms of those assignments, and they will have the ability to create their own assignments if that's what they choose to do. They will have to, in a traditional sense of you know, assessment with rubrics based on the learning outcomes of the course, and the course has been designed with those learning outcomes in mind. They will have to demonstrate, you know, that they've achieved those outcomes. For those that are participating for their own interest, they can participate as they please. And I think that, as I said, the experience is really a smaller group tend to participate more frequently than the others. Now, I might be completely off. It might be the case that we, you know, have a class like Lane's that are incredibly active, and we have some very unusual kinds of levels of interaction. But based on those experiences and the looking at the massive open online courses, that's the kind of level of participation I predict, Nina. So you're right in there with that 95% who just want to come and hang out. And if the participation is, you know, we can feel that it would be nice to continue to open it up, well, we just create some more, we create some more accounts for more positions. So if we have 200 people sign up, well, maybe we create another 100 accounts and see how that works. So, yeah, we will see. Can I ask Luis a question, Vance?
Oh, I was, well, if you have something more to say, go ahead. I was going to get Aiden, since she got back, to tell us more about world Englishes and miscommunications in view of English as an international language.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Anyway, but
no, please.
Finish your point.
Well, my answer is a separate question for Luis, so that's okay.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Aiden, would you like to tell us about your world English and miscommunications?
Okay, well, I'll try. I'm not sure if you can hear me clearly because I don't have a workable microphone. Just let me know if you can hear me.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, well, the World Englishes project is, I was in charge of that a few years ago before I left Guangzhou, and it's a project which is supported by some private organizations, and it is actually led by Waseda University. And what they do is they are in collaboration with different classes in different countries. For example, when I was in charge of this project in my school, there were about 4 or 5 universities, and that means 5 classes. And each class has about 40 students. Well, mine, at the time, I had 50 students. So that's about a big collaborative project wherein there were about 250 to 300 students participating. But the course was done, well, you know, we had these video lectures that were posted on sort of like a Moodle And so when Nina mentioned something about the MOOC, it was exactly like that. And it was, you know, they organized the materials quite well. So it was, you know, the materials were accessible and they were arranged in order. However, the level of participation with the students were not as high, because I felt that you know, the students were forced to participate and they were forced to present online. Mine was a blended learning course, so the face-to-face interaction helped, but with the online interaction with the other foreign students, I think that they were merely doing it simply because they had to, and that's part of getting the grade. So that's all I have to say. But before I go, we have this face-to-face meeting in Singapore, in all this, you know, selected students were invited to go to Singapore, and their, you know, lodging and airfare were paid for by Waseda University. So that's one good thing about this project. Well, you can follow the link if you want to know more about it, but I'm no longer in charge of this project.
Thanks, Aidan. That's interesting. I think it's... No, thanks, Karen.
Oh, well, yeah, I was probably going to say about what you're going to say, and that is, we are coming to the end of an hour, which is most people's approximate attention span when they're watching videos or listening to things like this. So we might want to be thinking about wrapping it up, but whatever you want to do is fine, too. So back to you, Robert.
Well, I can certainly talk a lot more about this kind of stuff. Yeah, this is kind of what's keeping me busy, and this is where my interests are at this point. So it's just wonderful to be able to find some different ideas and get some feedback there. I think to Aidan's point, it really is difficult to create that kind of experience. That how do you get the students to be passionate and care deeply about the work that they have to do, and obviously we have to take some responsibility for designing that, for structuring that, for organizing that, and of course there is a requirement as part of a program that we assess and we grade and we you know, take care of all of these different requirements. But what we're really looking for, and this is part of the hope of the inclusion of people in the network, what we're really hoping for is that I just want to do this. I'm in that moment. I'm engaged like the best moments of when we're out there on the web exploring, you know, those different resources that come our way. We're like, yes, that's brilliant. That's what it's about. If by including, you know, that diversity, an additional 100 or so, you know, we can demonstrate, you know, that level of joy for learning that takes place, you know, as we're investigating these different things on our own, then maybe we can fuse these two elements and create a more rewarding learning experience for everyone, for the students with those requirements and for those that are participating, you know, as part of this group. So I don't know. I mean, that's one of those really tricky balances to get at again. But we'll see what we can do to create that.
Robert, I have another question. When will your synchronous sessions take place? Will they all be on the same day at the same time, or will they vary?
That's a good question. You know, we're very fortunate. A fellow, Lay might know if she's involved in this field, Paul Gorski is going to join us. Gorski's written a number of articles, such as Tackle Night Is Not Enough, where he basically says that way of addressing multicultural issues by putting on a night where you have tacos doesn't really get at Mexican culture in the United States.
Superficial. We need hidden culture.
Exactly. So Gorski's going to join us at this point. I just arranged it so it worked conveniently for his schedule, Nina. It's going to be on Thursday, I think, June. I need to check exactly. June 27th. Thursday, June 28th. I reached out to Lisa Del Pitt, who has done a number of books in the field as well, and she's a maybe at this point. But I'm basically just trying to bring in some thought leaders in the field and see what it works for their schedule. They'll be recorded.
Unfortunately, I find that when it comes to going to a recording of a session that I missed, that I have good intentions, but I don't usually go back and do it. So it will depend on the individual guest speaker schedules, and that's good and it's bad. I mean, if you have a set time and I'm likely to be available at that set time, that's good. But if you have a lot of different times and different days, that means that, you know, I may be available for some of them. I may not be available for all of them, but it's unlikely that I will be unavailable for all of them. It's kind of like, you know, you can please some of the people some of the time and all of the people some of the time and none of the people all of the time, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, I think in terms of the live sessions, I mean, one of the models that has developed is those weekly live, you know, meetings with experts in the field. And I will probably, it's a 7-week course, we'll probably just have two...
7 weeks or 10 weeks?
7, yeah.
I thought you said 10 before.
So we'll probably just have two sessions. If Lisa Del Pitt can't come, then we're going to have probably the coordinator for Indian Education for All come and speak to really the diversity issue for Montana, which is dealing with the miseducation of Native American people. So, yeah.
Some of that was difficult to hear. Was it just my audio? But
sorry. If we don't have, there's some feedback, but if we don't have or are able to get the speaker that we would like, we will also look at bringing in a speaker to discuss Indian Education for All. We'll have some speakers, but part of the idea of this course is that we are interacting around those topics. So there'll be a case study, there'll be different types of discussions, there'll be use of voice threads, there'll be all types of different sharing opportunities. We'll use a Google Doc that's embedded within Moodle to share different resources. We'll use Google Plus, we'll use Twitter. I have to kind of be careful in terms of selecting too many tools because this is a group of that come from a diverse background. They may be counselors, they may be possibly educators in curriculum instruction. They may be taking this course as part of the psychology program at the university. So I don't want to overwhelm with media and tools, and yet we want to be able to connect, and so you have to kind of, at least in my opinion, again, scaffold that as part of this allowing individuals to participate as fully as possible.
So, Robert, you're going to have two groups of students, some taking it for credit and some taking it as part of the open course, openness?
Yeah.
With no accountability. You'll have both types of students, right?
So we'll have about, my guess is, I mean, it might not pan out, but we'll definitely have around 20 graduate students at the University of Montana taking this course for 3 credits, and then we'll have maybe around 100 other open participants taking it for interest. And so out of that 100, I would guess the vast majority will lurk. Hopefully, we have a small hardcore group that likes to participate actively, and everyone will all bring some potential to this course that we can't predict.
I have a question for the group. Does anyone know of any work or research on mixing the two, mixing students who are taking it for credit requirements, mixing that with the concept of the open course? Is there work being done on how the interaction plays out among the students? Do they tend to just stick with the two separate categories? Are they all in one? Or if anyone's done that before, do you have any impressions?
That was the premise of the first books that Downs and Siemens,
okay.
Downs, Cormier, yeah, they had people taking the course for credit, and you know, yeah. So I remember how they were mixing that. I think Kurt Bonk might be doing a course with some students right now. I have that impression. That's our next. I hope it's our next week's session.
I'm in that course too.
Oh, cool.
I'm a lurker.
Uh-huh. and you know, on the topic of lurking, I'm kind of the opposite of Nina. I really appreciate having the recordings because and for that reason that you mentioned that they tend to be one way, but the one way course I can really pick up on in my car, you know, on my way to work. I have kind of almost a 40-minute commute. So, and running, you know, out jogging, stuff like that. I've listened to many of Robert's instructional design sessions that he was doing with World Bridges, and I've Peggy George's sessions. She does Classroom 2.0 sessions frequently. And the Change MOOC, there's a place you can go and download the recording, so I listen to those in the car. Really nice session I was listening to the other day by George Siemens, who was talking about learning analytics, but also talking about how, well, basically learning analytics lets you figure out how you pull together the diverse elements in a course, assuming that it's going to be that there is no place in those courses for you to go and get the information you need. The information is kind of out there on the internet. So they have strategies. One of them is the daily newspaper that Stephen Downs puts out, and another one is a little script that Stephen wrote, which you sign up for. And once you've registered your blog, then that script will go out and find the blog posts that you're making and put them together actually in the daily. So there's a little newsletter that comes out. It's kind of like one of these paperly things, except it's more focused on the course. So anyway, there's so many really neat examples, and I think I guess most people would think that I'm a lurker because I really rarely interact with these, but I learn a lot from them because they mount these wonderful talks all the time that you can listen to as opposed to listening to pop music on the radio. There's Rita. Hi there, Rita. How are you? Rita Hello. From Argentina.
Hi, Rita. How are you?
Hello, Robert. Nice to see you here.
Great to see you as well. Yeah, what a treat.
Yeah, what a treat, really. Hello, Vance. Hello, Nina. Hello. And everybody.
Hi, Rita.
Sorry, my video froze a long time ago. The only way to fix it is to pop out and come back in. I didn't want to miss the conversation. So we've been having a really nice one.
Yeah, sorry to be late, really.
Yeah, well, you can get the recording. This is being recorded, you know.
Oh, yeah. So this is the
end. It's going up
on
YouTube.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, I would have liked to be here before, and I tried to join you before, really, but it was impossible for some reason.
Okay. Well, anyway, glad you made it, and you can go back and hear the whole recording.
Yeah, I will, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been fun. Of course, you always learn much more through the discussion that you come with the idea that you're going to explain something. But one of the questions that Lane had, Rita, just a moment ago, was that what investigations have there been in into the student interaction within open online courses? So those taking the course for credit as part of their university requirement, and those taking the course just for their own interest, when you get these two groups together, how does that impact the learning? What's that kind of participation dynamic like, I think was part of Lane's thought. And there hasn't been a whole lot of research on that. I actually wrote Alec Kouros a month or two ago and said, you know, Alec, this is what I'm up to. I'm interested in hearing what you've done. And he said, well, I'm on sabbatical this coming year, and I'm going to investigate more of that, those participation dynamics.
Okay.
So that, but Alec's,
right.
Alec's focus is more on what is the participation of, or at least this is as much as I've understood so far, and I might be wrong. So the focus of the research that's being conducted so far is on the individuals that are participating for their own interest. And what I'm really interested in focusing on is how does the participation of, you know, those non-credit participants affect the learning outcome achievement of the four-credit student participants mm-hmm. in the course.
Yeah.
So diversity adds a great deal to the learning experience. We can understand that and in philosophical terms, but is this actually having a practical difference in terms of student achievement? And if we can do some research and find support for that, then we have evidence to back up an approach to learning that is more effective. And that's what I'd like to get at.
Okay, great.
Have you, I suppose you've read Pops, I can't remember her first name. She did a study of one of those MOOCs, I think in 2008, something like that. Do you know who I'm talking about? If not, I can look it up.
The Romanian woman?
I guess so. Her name is Kop, K-O-P.
Oh, no, different. I thought Pop.
I'll look it up. I'll see what I can find. Anyway,
Rita
she
Kop.
Did a study. Rita Kop, that's it. Yes, Rita Kop. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she did a nice study, and then also Dave Cormier did a study with a whole bunch of other authors, including his wife, Bonnie, and George Siemens, and they wrote kind of a manual of, a reflection on their MOOCs. But Rita's was research.
Vance, may I ask a technical Google Hangout question? I was looking for you guys today, and I couldn't find a link on learningtogether.pbworks. And Aiden eventually sent me the link.
Yeah, that happened to me.
Is there a way, is there always going to be the same link like there was with Illuminate, or is there a different link for every Hangout?
Yeah, we'll have to work. This is our first time to do it this way, so obviously we'll find a mechanism for the next one. If we do this again, when we do this again, I should say.
I think maybe putting it out on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I tweeted it.
Okay, yeah. But then I use Twitter so infrequently. Maybe I just don't know how to search for something like that.
We got a little messed up tonight because Robert somehow got the time shifted. I'm not sure. And before the session, I was a little, 10 minutes before, I thought, man, I'd better start a Hangout. I wasn't sure if Robert was going to start one. So I started one, and it got 6 o'clock, and I was, normally I think we'd set this up a little bit in advance and have a little bit more time. But anyway, we're learning. We're all learning together. That's the whole point of this.
Right. So next Sunday, for example, where would I go to find the link, or how would I get the link to join the Hangout?
Well, that's going to be okay, on a future Sunday. I think Kurt, assuming he agrees to do, and we're talking about his agreement in email, so it's looking very positive, but he'll be doing it probably in his own Illuminate, possibly, so we'll put the link there. But if we're doing a Hangout, then somebody... Well, we have to start one, and then we have the link, and then I can put it at Learning Together, I can tweet it, and if you're in my Google, if you're in my Google Circles, I ought to make sure you're in my Google Circles, because I shared this with my professional contacts.
I never figured out what to do with those Google Circles other than to keep adding to them.
Well, you go onto Google, you go onto Gmail or Google, and you click on the Nina Plus, for me it's Vance Plus, of course, and then that will open up your Facebook-like page, and in there you'll see, if you're in my circle, you'll see that you have an invitation to the Hangout. So that's, or you can, another way, you can search on me. You go to Google Plus and search on me, and it'll pull up my profile, and you'll see where I'm hanging out. That's the way I always find Jeff.
Okay, I'm trying that.
Sorry.
A ported phone, look at that.
Yeah. Anyway, excuse me one second.
Yeah. It's probably getting about time that Robert needs to meet his other appointments, and he seems to have disappeared anyway. So here he is. I really like these conversational sessions. I like them so much better than the ones where you're being talked to, and the ones that I can just as easily pick up in the recording on my car. You know, it's just so much fun to just sit and talk to people. And Jeff's sessions are always like that. I always hang out with Jeff if I get the chance, and sometimes he gets some pretty nice people to talk to. So anyhow, well, I don't know. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah. Thanks for helping set this up, and I'm glad that we could get everyone together and have a chat. This has been wonderful. I hope to have you visit that site, EAC, instructionaldesigning.org, and sign up. It's kind of a work in process, but I'll get you into the course, and we'll see what this all brings. But, thank you.
Nice to see you, Robert.
Yeah, you probably have your tools at the university, but the big limitation of Hangout is it only allows 10 people in at a time. So if you're running a MOOC, you know, then it's not really going to work too well for you, unless you just take the first 10 people, have a nice integrament group, you know, that makes it intimate. You're welcome to use the Illuminate from the webheads. That's always available. And of course, you probably have your own. And if you schedule any of your sessions at about this time on a Sunday, well, we'll just kind of come aboard, you know, and we could announce it as a Learning Together session if you want.
Yeah,
options for you.
It's an interesting kind of balance. We obviously want this to be as open as possible, and then we at the university have certain requirements in terms of what we can and can't do in terms of FERPA requirements. And use of social media. We have policies on social media use. So I'm kind of exploring these different options as well as what we can do, but I'll definitely make all of the sessions that we do public in some way or another.
Okay, well, I just got a note on Google Hangout that said, are you still there? Maybe it's noticed my video is frozen, I'm not sure. But anyway, it could be a little bit of a hint. It's also kind of dinner time here, and I'm getting hungry, and we've kept all of these good people glued to their screens for all this time, and so maybe we should...
Thanks again. Thank you all. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Have a good Sunday, whatever. whatever's left to you.
Yep. Bye-bye.